Tuesday Takeover with Pussy Palace on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Pussy Palace Takeover is in session.
We are doing it!
Can you imagine?
Ah!
A whole us.
Ah!
So, we should probably introduce ourselves. This
Who
is,
are you?
Who am I? Who is she? That is a very good Big Brother reference that you may not get.
I don't.
So yes, I'm Aiden. And
Hi,
this
Aiden.
Is...
I'm Dan, a.k.a. King Boo.
And
How
we
are you?
Are from Pussy Palace.
Yes.
So let's introduce Pussy Palace if this is the first time you're coming across us. PP, or as we like to be called as well, is a collective that prioritizes and centers queer women, trans, and non-binary people of color in everything that we do.
We do.
We hold a club night once a month, and we have been doing that for the last 4 years. Our baby just turned four
last weekend.
Yes. The Stevie Wonder version. So yeah, we're 4 years old, and that's what we do. Since we've started the club night, we've also branched out into workshops and other ways in which we can hold space for our community and for our people.
Yes.
And we're really happy to be on FUBAR today to...
Taking over.
To do a workshop on...
Yes.
On what, Dan? What's the workshop on?
On self-love and self-care.
Yes.
My absolute favorite topic.
It's what we need for the seasonal depression.
Woo, because it is so gray outside.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect day to listen to. To us, let us warm you up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So as you're listening onto the show, feel free to tweet and Instagram message us on FUBAR Radio, and we'll be taking questions later on. So if you've got any self-care questions, you want some advice, we'll have some guests that will be able to help answer that as well.
Yes.
Make sure you email takeover@fubarradio.com.
We really want to hear from you.
We do.
Not just about us, it's about our community.
Mm-hmm. We also wanted to shout out the rest of Pussy Palace. We could not forget the rest of the team. So in addition to me and Dan, we have Nadine Artois, who's one of the founders. Also Sky, another
what
of the
up?
Founders. Aaron. We have Lewis, Leah, Mata. Who else?
Bernice.
There you go.
And me and you.
Yes.
Yeah. It's... we roll deep.
We do.
Nine strong. Okay.
Nine strong. So yeah, shout out to the rest of the team.
Yes.
It is everything that we do is such a team effort, a collaboration, and we do a good job of holding each other accountable.
Yes.
Which is what we love.
Yes.
So how was your weekend, Dan?
My weekend was jam packed with Pussy Palace birthday.
Ooh,
yes.
Do tell. What did we do for our birthday?
We had a lovely party at Colors Hoxton.
Mm-hmm.
We had two rooms activated. We had the sanctuary going. We had DJs from Canada. We had some of our old DJ students some of our residents.
Some like, family favorites.
It was wild.
Yes.
It was a very beautiful birthday. I'm really excited for what's to come for
us. Can you believe 4 years?
4 years. That's a long time.
And so if anyone doesn't know, Pussy Palace started as a house party.
Yes.
Sky and Nadine started that four years ago. Or maybe that was 5 years ago, actually. And then since then, it's been taken out of the house into clubs. And they've just been building and building. And so now it's kind of like a landmark in the London queer underground scene.
It is.
So That's the show. Well, no, that's not the show. The show is... Okay, that's all from us. Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you for listening.
So, no, for the show, we'll be joined by three illustrious guests.
Yes.
By the names of Chloe Fulani, Jocelyn Newton, and Georgia Dodsworth.
Yes.
They'll all be joining us a bit later. They are all versed in self-care, self-love. They've brought themselves to share of themselves and their knowledge, their experience, their thoughts, their ideas. And so we're going to enjoy that. We're going to have like a round table discussion about what self-care means to us individually, collectively, and how we can practice it best.
Yep. We're going to journey through that. It's a process. It's an individual process. And I can't wait to hear about other people's tools and tips and how they practice self-love and self-care. So really, really excited to chat with our guests and chat with each other. So, yeah.
Also, let's set the precedent for the show. We love pronouns here at Pussy Palace.
Ooh.
So, my name is Aiden, and my pronouns are they, them.
And my name is Dan, and my pronouns are she, her.
And I guess we could do a little what do pronouns mean, if that's a new introduction to someone. So, pronouns are the way in which you address someone in conversation with them. So, you have he, him, you have she, her, you have they, them. And people have preferences of how they like to be addressed, and it's always a great one of the easiest ways to be an ally is to respect that and to honor that. So we'll be asking our guests the same, and feel free to let us know that when you message in as well. I feel a mood for a song.
Let's do it.
Is anyone?
I put together like this really fun playlist.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that.
You mean a playlist curated by Dan? For the whole show?
Radical self-love.
Aren't we lucky?
Yes. Let's do it.
Tuesday Takeover with Pussy Palace on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah. what I want.
Yes, yes, yes. You are back with the PP Pussy Palace Takeover. Dan and Aiden and Fubar yes. Radio Studios. So excited to be here. Love that track from Unique. We mm-hmm. love Unique. Unique was here a couple months ago, right?
For our Moist party, yes, which was, I think, was July
so
or August.
So moist.
So good.
Yes,
so
yes,
good.
Yes. We love friend of a show, friend of our parties. And that is what you can expect yes. when you come to our parties.
We're a big fan of Jersey that? Club.
Yes.
At
yes,
Pussy Palace. Yes. So yeah, those are the kind
booty
of sounds
popping.
That you experience when you come to our parties. It's a bit of underground. We kind of mix it with you know, a tinge of mainstream, the mainstream that we allow.
Yeah, you know, the stuff you want to sing along
yeah.
to.
As well as some new sounds, some underground sounds from around the world that are being made by the pioneers of like queer music
yes,
globally.
Yes, with heavy, heavy bass mm-hmm. underneath.
Yeah.
That's what we love.
Okay, and so we are joined by some of our guests in the studio at the moment.
Yes, welcome, welcome.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
So happy y'all are here. We have today with us Jocelyn Newton from Our Naked Truths mm-hmm. and also Georgia Dodsworth, self-care queen. Mm-hmm. So excited to get to know you and get to know about your self-care, self-love journey today. Yes, but also let us know what you actually do in this world, how you show up in this world, and what are you giving to us?
What are we giving? Yes. All the offerings.
Yes.
So I'm Jocelyn, Yeboah Newton. I am the founder of a life art therapy series called Our Naked Truths. And Our Naked Truths is a space predominantly for all femmes of colour to come together and reclaim their stories and their bodies through life art. So basically what that means is we have people that model for the first time completely nude, sharing their stories of self-acceptance. And inviting people to come and also share their stories of self-acceptance, because if we get used to hearing other people telling their truths and owning their truths, it inspires us to own ourselves and own our own stories. And also, if we get used to seeing bodies that look like ours, it also allows us to reclaim our bodies and accept our bodies. So that's one facet. And I also navigate this world by managing an artist called Alexander London. For anyone who wants to check him out, he's ALXNDR London, and on the socials at Mixim, so MXIIXM. So yeah, a few things. I navigate the space in a few different realms, and just trying to make sure that I'm honouring my ancestors and everything that I do, and just making sure that what I do is done with intent and purposeful.
You make it look so easy.
It's not. It's not. It's just not. Like the self-love thing.
That's
it's not
real.
Easy. You
that's
know?
So,
but we're
so
here.
Real. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. Yes.
Thank you.
And tell us a little bit about yourself, Georgia.
So yeah, my name's Georgia, otherwise known as Self-Care Queen. So I do a lot of work within the mental health field. So I give talks and workshops to people at schools, universities, brands, offices, sharing my own experience with depression and anxiety and borderline personality disorder. So I share myself really vulnerably, and I offer some strategies and practical tips that people can do to take care of themselves. And I also lead self-care workshops as well, which are really, really fun, and getting everyone engaged in how they can take care of themselves using self-care. So yeah, I feel like self-care, self-love is such a massive part of what I do day to day, and it feeds into all of my work. The other side of what I do as well, I'm an arts producer and writer, so I kind of link the arts with mental health, which is a great mix, because I feel like creativity really drives just imagination and self-love. So yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Jocelyn, you used to work also in the mental health
I was listening
sector.
To him, I was like,
yeah,
okay,
very similar.
Nice you. So I deliver mental health workshops and deliver training. So I'm newly self-employed. But my background is I used to work for DWP, writing and delivering mental health training across the job centres nationwide. Mm-hmm. And then also going into corporates and delivering kind of mental health first aid training and crisis training, safeguarding training, which I still kind of do on the side. Not doing enough of that as much because I've been so focused on Our Naked Truths. But 2020 is bringing beautiful blessings, an area where I can also start bringing in more opportunities to talk more about mental health, because it's important.
Mm-hmm.
It is important, and I love the fact that you are linking it in with creativity, because that is a big part of expression, a big part of managing mental health for a lot of people. And I feel like we're, especially with like the mental health strategy, which ends next March, isn't it, 2020, people are a bit more open and well-versed in learning about what tools we need in order to take care of ourselves around our mental health. And it's just nice to know there's so many more people of colour, much more people of colour out there doing these bits.
It's really beautiful. Got a synergy here today.
Mm-hmm. I can already
feel it. I know. And remember, later on in the show, we're going to be answering your questions, the community's questions. So be sure to tweet us and DM us at FUBAR Radio, please. So let's get into it. Yeah. Well, first of all, what is self-love and self-care? I'm just going to run through that just a little bit. For me, self-love is different from self-care, as it's about taking actions to love and accept yourself and who you are. Self-care is about the restorative action, about being compassionate towards yourself. But self-love is more so about really embracing your true, authentic self. Learning how to feel comfortable in yourself and taking steps to remind yourself of who you are in a society where you're constantly trying to mold, they're trying to mold us into something else. If you aren't able to fully live as your true and authentic self, it might be about finding places and ways to show yourself that you, that who you are matters. Living in this world, in our society, as a woman or LGBTQIA person or any other non-conforming sexuality, gender, is really, really fucking hard.
Mm-hmm.
And we're constantly told that we need to do better, to fit into certain stereotype of what it means to be a person in our society. And this is especially multiplied if you are a Black or brown person.
Mm.
So it's so important to carve out space for yourself where you can reflect on love, loving yourself.
Yeah.
First question, who taught you how to love you? Is that like a super, super personal journey? Was it something that you learned from observing other people, family members? I would love to, you know, hear about that journey, Georgia, if you'd like to share.
Yeah, I feel like my journey to loving myself started quite young, like age maybe 13, 14. And I was in the kind of darkest, deepest depths of my depression. And I wasn't going to school, I was going to therapy and therapy only. And I started writing and journaling, and I kind of realized that I have to love myself, I have to support myself. Like, people can help me along this journey, but essentially, like, I am in control and I have to kind of really fight hard to love the bits that I don't like about myself. So it was my body. So I really didn't like my body. I thought I was fat. I didn't like my stretch marks, my eczema. So it was kind of embarking on that journey to loving it. So like doing lots of like mirror work, lots of kind of drawing, lots of kind of just being confident and owning myself. So that was where it started for me. And I feel like I'm still on this journey. I feel like everyone's on the journey. It doesn't, it never stops.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like people talk about, oh, they're healed or they're better. But I feel like it never stops. You're always on a journey, no matter how many like days you feel amazing or how many days you feel like pretty shit. Like, everyone's on this journey of up and down. It's just about finding like the resilience and the coping skills and the acceptance to be able to kind of send that message back to yourself and know that you're worth it and know that you can love yourself from a place of honesty and vulnerability. Like, I feel that I learned it by tuning in with myself, really, and sitting with myself in that shit and crying and writing and I kind of didn't really talk about it much to my friends or family. I was a very kind of insulated kind of person. Maybe that was because I was an only child. I'm not too sure.
Same.
You feel me? So I was like, I'm my own best friend. Like, come on. Like, I did have friends, but I thought this journey was so... I feel like I was very wise beyond my years, and my friends were still kind of into the whole, like, dating or what's happening online. And I was like, what's happening in my head? What's happening in my body? And kind of really tuning into that. So that's where it started for me.
That's really, I can relate so hard to that. Like you said, it's an ongoing journey, still on it, overcoming some hurdles, getting there, and like dapping myself for that, because like it takes so much hard work and diligence. But yeah, I kind of, I look forward to the ever evolving process of self-love. Like, what does that extreme look like, extremity of self-love look like, you know? Yeah, I'd love to hear from you, Jocelyn, also, if you'd like to
share. Thank you so much for that. That was really beautiful to hear your offering. And also, first off, just be wary of people that say they're healed. First off. And secondly, I completely agree in terms of self-love being a constant evolving process. I think for me, it's constantly changing, which is beautiful. I think self-love really starts from when you're born. You may not be aware of it, through your experience. I definitely wasn't aware of it growing up, up until like my late teens, early 20s. My mental health journey started quite early, in terms of exploring that and being met with crisis, having diagnosis, not fully understanding that, being a young person, and also coming from a very conservative Ghanaian home. That played quite a big part in how I expressed myself and what I understood as self-love. I have my mother, who is an incredible woman. And I guess her expression of self-love that was taught to us in the home was, we were taught to be comfortable with our bodies from quite a young age. Like, in my home, there was myself, my younger sister, and my mum. So navigating the house naked was always just, it was just a thing. It was just the same as breathing. I remember time mum would come home, like from work, whip off her clothes, sit in front of like the TV watching EastEnders with a cup of tea completely naked, and that was just normal. So I was quite used
to so relaxing.
I was quite used to being able to connect with my physical self. But growing up, even though that was a space of freedom, I had a very unhealthy relationship with my physical self. So my nakedness would look like I was really confident with my body. I mean, I used to answer the door naked. If I was naked and the door was needed to be answered, I would answer the door naked. So people would think I was super confident, but I actually wasn't. It was almost like, you know how comedians will do this, they'll create a piece that's basically mocking their story, because if they can mock it first, it's easier to accept when other people choose to mock. And that's kind of what I used to do. So it used to look like, oh, Justin really loves herself and really confident, but actually I wasn't. It was the polar opposite of that. And I think growing up, being around lots of kind of matriarchs and strong black women was really helpful. But I don't think I really came into my understanding of what self-love meant after experiencing a certain amount of trauma. Getting to my early 20s and realising that I needed to make some key changes. I was very unwell in my late teens, so like my new 20s was almost like another rebirth. And life art, life modelling became a thing. I really wanted to do it. I had one auntie, Big Up Big Sis, aka Sowa, who was kind of the radical one in the family. She used to life model, and she was very confident in her body, and you'd go to her home and you'd see all these beautiful paintings and artworks of her just adorning her beautiful black body, and she looked like me, and it was the first time I was able to see another woman's body who looked like mine, who was being drawn and celebrated, not for titillation, not for somebody else's sexual gratification, and not because of the male gaze, just because she was beautiful. And that really intrigued me and inspired me, but I was quite nervous about it, and I used to speak to her quite a lot, because apparently we were very similar, because I was also very radical. So a lot of the family used to just, you're like Big Sis, you're like go in the corner, you know, go and be with Big Sis. It was that. But I connected with her quite a lot. She was a big inspiration for me, and I used to talk to her about it. And when I got to my 20s, and I kind of quit smoking, was going in the gym, and I was like, I want to challenge the way that I physically connect with myself by life modelling. And so I threw myself into life modelling. Lied, blagged my first job at the book club and pretended that I'd modelled before, had never done it, walked into a room of 50 people, had my first panic attack whilst modelling, went away, came back and modelled. And it was that experience of immersing myself in vulnerability with other people in the room, because it's not just standing there and looking pretty. All of your intrusions come up, all of those intrusions that tell you you're not beautiful, that your bum's too big, or your cellulite's there, or your stretch marks are here, or your breasts are saggy. They all come, they are alive, because silence is there. And so that exchange and that inner dialogue I had to kind of really immerse myself in, and also allow those thoughts to dissipate, which started to change how I related to my physical self. And therein was born Our Naked Truths 7 years later. But for me, I've been able to, I feel like I'm inspired by the stories of other black women and other femmes. I'm inspired by people being able to take charge of their vulnerability and own it and share that with other people. I'm inspired by my shadow work. I do a lot of shadow work. I've just come out of doing a few months of shadow work. So this is my first kind of re-emergence into the digital sphere and the commercial sphere and people sphere. Shadow work is very important. Dancing, being able to express yourself with loved ones. So yeah, I feel like it's constantly evolving. And there's new things in your toolbox that you need to acquire in order to really understand what self-love is. And I'm excited to continue this journey, because I feel like to reach a point in life when you fully accept everything you are, you've reached self-actualization. That's probably when you're just about to die, you know. So yeah, in a long convoluted expression, that's kind of like my connection with self-love and self-care. It's an ongoing process full of lots of different things.
So inspiring. So great to also hear the connection of how, like, Our Naked Truth started. It feels like it started in your home, you know, and it evolved into this beautiful platform that we all get to share in now. But also, you mentioned shadow work.
Yes.
What is shadow work?
So, shadow work is literally what you do in darkness. But a lot of people tend to think that shadow work is negative, it's where you're just depressed. And yeah, sometimes it might take hold of that. In our darkest moments are usually a call to do work, this call to action. At the time, it might feel like just depression is overwhelming, or I'm currently in psychosis and I'm just trying to figure out how to get to light. But actually, that is a call to action. To me, it's a spiritual call to action. And so shadow work can take form in lots of different ways. It might be how you meet yourself. So you might want to sit and do mirror work, sitting with yourself, holding space, staring at yourself, writing down thoughts and emotions that come up. It might mean you might need to take a social media break and come off of being so accessible and holding space for yourself. Shadow work might mean doesn't mean you need to be by yourself completely. You know, a lot of people tend to think, I'm just going to lock myself in my room and that's going to be my shadow work. No, it's just stuff that is done in a period of darkness. And that can be mirror work, that can be conversations with self, that can be journaling. I love to journal. I've just revisited that. I used to journal for a while and I stopped writing because I was getting a bit depressed with what I would read. I would reflect back and be like, shit, yes, this is so dark. Like, where is the light? Yeah. You know? And I just didn't want to see it anymore. And I realized that actually that was me running away from my shadow work. I needed to write that. I needed to see that. I needed to chart that journey, be honest with it, understand it, and not hide or feel any shame. We carry a lot of shame around our darkness. So journaling has definitely been a great tool that you can use in shadow work. Spiritual baths, I love a spiritual bath, and there's lots of different types of spiritual bath. You can have a cleansing bath, which just needs to lighten my energy, where you'll just get some Florida water, some Himalayan salt, might add some lavender or some dried rose petals, just rose petals, and just sit in a bath. Just sit in that bath. Think about your intentions that you want to set for yourself, and cleanse whatever you feel is sitting on your heart, you know? Or milk baths. So I love a milk bath, especially to attract abundance. Really important to do spiritual baths, especially if you're an empath and you're around lots of people a lot, carrying a lot of energy. You have to cleanse that and transform that energy somehow. You can't get rid of it. You know, a lot of people think, oh, you know, I need to get rid of this negative energy, I need to get rid of that negative person because they carry negative energy. In Taoism, we learn that energy can only be transformed. You can't dump it. And if you're not mindful of where that energy is being transformed, somebody else is going to pick it up. It's like, perfect example is, say, for example, I wake up, I drive, I wake up, I'm just angry for whatever reason. I didn't have time to ground myself because I'm running late. I'm supposed to be here, right? So I've got to go to radio. I wasn't late though, so I'm not.
Hey.
But you know, just so people know, people are punctual out here. But say, I woke up late, I'm running late to be here. I haven't had any time to ground myself, so I'm irritated. And you know when you're late? Every little thing annoys you. You having to wait that extra minute for the bus all of a sudden feels like how dare this
the
bus
end
be
of
late.
The world.
Yes. When someone barges you and you're trying to run for the bus, how dare you barge me?
Or the slowest walker.
You know,
of you.
The slowest walker. You just literally want to throw something at them. Like, there's no compassion there, there's no patience. You just want to get somewhere. But I'm a driver, so road rage is a thing, right? So when you're running late, you want to get to places quickly, but everyone seems to be holding you up. Say, for example, I get to traffic lights, I decide to quickly swerve someone to jump ahead of them. That's me expressing my negative energy. That other driver's now received it. Now they're going to react. Maybe they might react to somebody else behind them, or they might react to me. I haven't transformed that energy, so now that energy is just going to carry through. That is a perfect example of Taoism and how we need to transform that. And just spiritual baths are a great way to do that and shadow work. I also implore...
I was going to say, in that scenario, raise hand for question. In that scenario of road rage and the transference of energy, who is the empath?
Who is the empath?
Yeah.
I don't think the empath place doesn't really hold in that. I'm just giving you an example of how energy can be transferred. But if you were an empath, a perfect example of, I'll use me, like I'm an empath. I facilitate a space where people come and bring their traumas. You know, and even though I'm a mental health first aider, I deliver that training. I am a first aider. I had to understand that I'm going to carry a lot. As soon as people walk in, when you come to our Naked Truths, everyone receives a hug. And it's very important that people receive that physical closeness. So when you sit down, you know that this place is for you, that you can be at ease. But when you do that, there's transference. And I was always picking, I could feel when someone's not, when someone gets to that door, I can already see it and feel it, then we're connecting. So our heart chakras are connecting and now there's going to be a transference. If you are not cleansing that energy as an empath, you feel weighted, you feel very tired, you can get quite irritable and be like, why am I so irritated?
It's
because you're carrying all of this, this unsettled negative energy and you haven't given yourself a place to ground yourself or cleanse it. That impacts an empath very much so. The tiredness is a very real thing. You all of a sudden feel exhausted and you don't know why. You know, you guys host an amazing space for Pussy Palace and go to events because it's such a family vibe and it's such a celebratory expression, a form of expression for people. People still come to that dance with trauma, dance away their traumas and be sharing their traumas. I've seen it, like Pussy Palace. People are talking, like it's a counselling session, like
it's
in
therapy.
The hallway.
It really is.
Like it's happening, you know.
Yep.
And after that party, you might just want to go sleep. Really, by the next morning, that spiritual bath needs to be done because you've gathered so much energy. So that's it. I don't hope that's that makes sense.
That definitely does.
It's a great way of how empaths receive a lot of energy without understanding how to cleanse it. So yeah, shadow work is all that is done in darkness, but darkness doesn't have to be a period of sadness. It's a call to action to look at what tools do I need in order to re-emerge or rebirth, because I really believe that we die many deaths in our journeys, and shadow works are the opportunity to look at what I need to do before I rebirth.
So it sounds like shadow work is fundamentally part of your journey to prioritizing self-love for yourself.
Absolutely.
And Georgia, you said you do journaling. Would you also say that as part of your journey?
Yeah, 100%. So, like, I'm always between, like, journaling, then I'll have periods where I don't journal and, like, I can really notice it. So I started again maybe, like, 2 months ago and it's just really helpful where I can just, a place where I can just, like, express myself and just cry and write and cry and write and then close it and then pick it up again and cry and write. And I don't really look back on it too often because I feel like, if I don't want to look back on pages that I wrote last week, like I'd much rather look back at where I was a few months ago and then I can see the journey. And I try hard not to compare, but it is quite difficult because I think a lot of us do compare. But times where I feel like, oh my gosh, it's just getting worse, I'm not getting any better, I look back and I can see that, like, I can see, oh, I've been able to process that situation now I understand it. I understand myself. So yeah, I feel like journaling is a massive part. Mm. And also, I forgot to mention, I do like body positivity work. So I do lots of like modelling in my underwear. And that's really empowering. Mm. I did like my first shoot like a year and a bit ago.
Yes.
Maybe 2 years ago now, actually. And I remember I stood there in front of the camera in my underwear and I was like really self-conscious. I was like, I don't think I like this. And then as soon as the camera started taking pictures, I was like, I found myself, like, this is my body and I'm owning it. And I don't have to always cover up. I don't have to, like, yeah, I can just express myself. And then going to Pussy Palace, I was like, I can wear what I want. I can be who I want. And yeah, I feel like, yeah, just expressing myself in all the different ways that I can choose to. And I try not to care what people think about me or people's opinions or what society thinks. Like, I'm just going to do it anyway because I feel good by doing it. Like, I feel like a lot of people care about what other people think, or if I say this to that person, how will they feel? But at the end of the day, what only matters is what you think and how you feel. Like, you can tell people stuff and they can interpret it and process it in different ways, but at the end of the day, we can't all be healers. We can't all be counselling one another, like, because that's when bad patterns come in and toxicity and all of that. So yeah.
Real talk. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. Let's talk a little bit about, because you were talking about the work, the shadow work, doing the hard parts of self-loving that leads to self-care. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about hashtag self-love versus IRL self-love, right?
Yeah.
Is there a difference? We see a lot of, you know, digital self-love. But is there a performance aspect to that that is not... is invalid in a way, or is it all a part of the same journey to self-love? Like, how do y'all think about that? What do you think about that?
I think it's a mixture of things. Hashtag self-love to me is, there's a duality to it. Mm-hmm. So there's parts of it that are actually really important, mm-hmm. because the awareness and the conversations that we're having about self-love, we didn't have 10 years ago because we weren't really on social media. We weren't able to see this community of people having similar conversations, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been quite powerful, I think. But then at the same time, the duality of it is that it's very easy to take a selfie and hashtag self-love because you've got no makeup on that day and I love myself.
Yeah.
But that's where it becomes a curated performance. Mm. And to be fair, everyone's allowed to share what they want to share. You don't have to share everybody where you're at home self-harming or you're at home having a psychotic breakdown. You don't have to share that. That doesn't mean that you're fake. But at the same time, we're still only getting snippets of that journey. Mm-hmm. Mm. So therefore, there is a performance to it. And I think, because even now, like, I speak to some people, like, I just want to love myself, and they will mention a particular influencer, or they'll mention a particular person, and I'm like, but you don't know what goes on outside of this social media sphere. Some of those same people that you're mentioning, I have had personal conversations with, and they will cry on my shoulders, like, because they are humans too. So I think there is a beauty to it, because we need that inspiration. Some people don't have a community, like a physical community, where those conversations are being had. So going online to see that is really helpful because you can see other people. But I think it's really important to be aware of the duality of it, to be aware that it's curated, to be aware that we're only getting a snippet, because when you see those snippets, that's where comparison theory comes in. That's where, and it's a comparison theory isn't just for teenagers. Adults are experiencing it as well. Mm. You know, that trauma of, oh my God, this person, what's they doing? They're so happy. Mm. They were depressed, but look at them now. Why am I still in this darkness? And it's like, girl, you don't know what they're having to do. That person's an influencer. She has to get paid. She needs to put that makeup on and smile so that brand can give her that money. But, you know, like, you don't know what people's journey is. And I think that's the danger of hashtag self-love, that you can literally click on a hashtag and see millions of inflections of people's experience of self-love that is curated.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, whereas we know in real life, you know, like, Sunday I might have had a breakdown, but I'm here today and I'm celebrating who I am. You know, like, that's real life.
Yeah.
You may not see that. Like, so I think, it's just about really understanding the duality of it and being very careful. I think it's really important to be very careful with how we invest in this beautiful, curated hashtag.
Definitely agree. I feel like if we... if we look at it through our lens and we process the fact that we are always going through something, when we look at other people's process, we know that there's like the light side, the side that you share, the side that, you know, may get you attention and whatnot, and then the other side that you may keep private, keep to yourself. And if you approach social media, to me, with like a more balanced or almost mature perspective, from that perspective, then you're less likely to get caught up in the feelings of like, oh, this person has it, you know, better than me, or comparing yourself in that way, you know, because you're aware that like we're all going through the spectrum of emotion and sharing as and when we feel comfortable too. But yeah, we have lots more to talk about on self-love and self-care. Let's take a little music break.
Why not?
And
yes.
Jump into this, one of my favorite tracks from
What do we have
Ace?
Next on the playlist, Dan?
Manuel, Body Drop. I love to play this in the club, by the way.
Back with Pussy Palace, takeover of FUBAR Radio. Some of you have really nice, lovely been emailing some of your self-care tips, what you do to keep yourself in check. So we've got a message from Georgie, who goes for runs to clear their mind and also treat themselves to a veggie breakfast at their fave local cafe to get out of the house. And I think that really beautifully, like, leads on to what we want to talk about next, which is kind of like the physical tools that we use. What do we do with our body to put us in the place to open up the space for us to engage in self-love and self-care?
Yeah, a lot of times it can be easier for us to take action before we understand like why we're attracted to that thing that we're doing, you know? Jocelyn, you mentioned that you take baths. One of my favorite things to do, especially when they're super intentional. Another thing I like to do is my hair. Taking that time, like, because that actually, it's hard for me to take the time out to prioritize just doing something that is actually makes me feel and look better. But doing it, sitting there for hours, combing through, oiling my scalp, at the end, I feel so beautiful inside and out, right? Other things I like to do are scents. I'm really into scents. So I have like a collection of oils and incenses that I like to burn. If I can't do, you know, some of the bigger things, use some of my bigger tools, I like to just activate feeling better by just lighting a scent. What are some of the things that maybe you all use? Other things, I know you mentioned journaling as well. Are there other tools that, you know, you have in your back pocket? Because sometimes the journaling doesn't work, so you have to do something else, you know. How do you psych yourself up to do the things that you know will make you feel better?
It's tricky because I feel like everyone does some kind of basic level of, like, self-care each day. So, like, getting up each morning, having a shower, brushing your teeth, because on some days I still can't do that because I'm really depressed. Or some days I can't eat because I just haven't been mindful and thought, oh my gosh, I need to eat until like 8 p.m. at night, and then my tummy's like screaming at me. So I feel like, yeah, everyone does do self-care, but it's about being mindful about it. So not just rushing in the shower, getting dressed quickly and rushing out the house, because did you remember, like, what shower gel did you use? What did you think about what clothes you were going to put on? So it's about being mindful and taking those mindful actions. But for me, as you said, like, senses, I feel like my sense, I have like quite a good like sensory practice. So I use lavender oil. I am like a massive fan of lavender oil. So I'll put that on my pillow at night, and I'll carry a little bit in my bag as well. And when I'm distressed, I will use that to calm myself down. Or also like squeeze my hands. Like, physical touch, I think, is really important for me. So making the time to moisturize every day as well. So I'm really nourishing my body, feeling myself, kind of, yeah, getting to grips with, like, my body, how my body's changing, how it's evolving. Also, like, food as well. I mean, I'm not the healthiest eater, but I try and have, like, at least, like, my 3 meals per day, and I'm drinking lots of water. So, yeah, it's about kind of bringing it back to the basics for me, self-care. And, yes, it is about the exercising. Yes, it is about, I don't know, feeling good and looking good, but for me, it is about how can I function? How can I keep my mental health stable that day? How can I look in the mirror and affirm myself? So I give myself affirmations as well. I have post-it notes around my room, kind of reassuring me that I'm loved, that I'm great, that I'm strong, that I'm soft, that I'm vulnerable. So it's kind of really, yeah, affirming myself with all the values that I want to carry around each day. And just being mindful about those practices and knowing why I'm doing it. So I'm putting lavender on my pillow because I want to soothe myself to sleep, or I'm listening to rain sounds because sometimes when I'm in my bed and I'm really distressed, having that bit of background noise really helps. It makes me feel less alone. So it's about making myself feel held and loved each day, and not feeling like somebody else has to hold that space for me. That, you know what, no, I can hold it. I can, even though I'm crying, I can hold myself through this time, and I can reach out, I can call Samaritans or the crisis lines, but essentially I am holding this space and I can do it. So about reaffirming myself that I can do that.
That's definitely been a long journey for me, that part. Like, knowing that I can take care of myself and I can make myself feel better. There was such a big void there before, you know, and I think the process of butting my head up against, like, looking for outside of myself and always coming back to me just prioritized me, you know, like, figuring out how to make myself feel better. And I'm still learning, because those tools also evolve and grow old. And when they do, it's like, okay, what's next?
What's the next thing?
I like that part. I like exploring to find what the next thing is going to be, you know?
Because I feel like sometimes, like, yeah, when you're looking constantly outside for it, it can develop into, like, unhealthy coping mechanisms. So, like, drinking or, like, binge eating or going out all the time, so you're not ever alone in your own space. I mean, I was caught up in that like last year, just kind of going out all the time or drinking a lot or eating a lot just to kind of fill that emptiness, and when I got home just sleep and not check in with myself. And it was by going to therapy and realizing that yes, my therapist can support me, but I have to do the work. I have to actually look deep inside myself. Like, I can go to my GP as many times as I want, but it always comes back to me. What am I doing? How can I help my mental health? So yeah, it is really hard because some days I know the good self-care to do, like getting up and getting active when I feel really depressed, but some days I just like don't want to do that. So it's a massive battle between myself, but I have to have reminders around my room, like physical reminders, so I can read like quotes that I've written or read like inspirational like lyrics or listen to music to kind of get me active and get me out of the house.
So, music is a big one.
Yeah,
I will say when all else fails, just press play. You know,
Beyonce and Lizzo are my two.
Just takes over your body in ways that, you know, maybe you can't psych yourself up, but then they start to, and yeah, it makes a big difference. Do you have any?
Yes. It's interesting because some of the things that you were doing, I was doing some of those, but I feel like my self-care toolkit has evolved as I have. So I guess 5 years ago, my self-care toolkit would be riding my bike. I'd ride my bike around the city, just lock off everybody, phone off, music in, and I'm just taking over London. If I sometimes would cycle from Bow to Hammersmith and back, because that would just be just to make sure I just was physically focused on doing something. Because if my body was physically attuned to doing something, my mind would then fall in sync, and that would help to calm thoughts down. Then it would be dancing at home with music, and, you know, holding space for myself, writing my journal, and then making sure I used to love lavender oil. Still do, but there's other oils that I've also fed in love with. So it's interesting how at that stage of my life, that's what worked for me. Now, things are different. Now I require silence. Silence is really important for me. I'm a social butterfly when I want to be, but it's really important for me to have that stillness. And I've been meditating, I would say meditating for about 7 years, but now like really focused on meditation the past year, and it's been really big part of my toolkit. And also looking at different types of meditation techniques. So I recently got back from a silent retreat where I stayed in a monastery.
For how long?
I was there for 4 days. I'm building up to do another 10 days next year in February. And I stayed at the monastery with these incredible monks who practice Soto Zen, which is another form of Buddhism. And there, as well as it kind of being around compassion and wisdom and connection to all beings, silence is paramount to everything that you do. And through silence, you meditate. So whether you're meditating whilst working, for example, you'll be having silence, but you're just doing one thing at one time. And so therefore you're more connected and focused on what you're doing. And the world that we're in now, and also me working across lots of different projects, and I'm so used to doing millions of things. Before I went to the retreat, my laptop would have all the tabs open, which was a reflection of my mind, because I'd be doing a million things all at the same time. So being there, not having a phone, not having access to reception, not taking, like, just completely stripped back of just being at one with myself, with the space, and being silent was a really beautiful experience. I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to do that. But their practice, when they meditate, you meditate with your eyes open. And I'm so used to, I do a lot of breath work. So I'm so used to kind of focusing on breath, expressing, doing my six and twos. There's none of that. And so that was very new to me. And for someone who's been meditating, just before I went to the retreat, I was meditating twice a day, journaling twice a day, and then going there and thought, okay, I can meditate for at least 25 minutes, so this will be okay. And the first practice was half an hour with your eyes open. There's no music. You get a gong to start off the practice and a gong to complete the practice, but that's it. And I realized how busy my mind was. It was so busy, and there was no distractions to run away from it. And so with that practice, the whole point is to find the silence in the practice, not to set intentions, not to be envisioning anything that you want to get out of that practice. It's just about being silent, because through silence, bliss is there. That's where compassion can be felt. That's where you can hear what your intentions need to be. So for me, yes, meditation has been another powerful tool, and simplifying that practice using the tools that I've gathered from that beautiful experience, spiritual baths, as I've mentioned before, practicing compassion, self-compassion. When you're an empath, it's so easy to be like, I recently did a workshop where we talked about fear and five things where fear had created boundaries or barriers to us achieving things. And so after people wrote those five things, they shared that in pairs. And what was so interesting is when they were sharing, the other person in their pair might have had some of the same fears that they had. And when they would hear that fear, that automatically, oh gosh, there was reassurance, there was compassion, there was empathy, there was solution-focused techniques and coping skills even offered. But when it's to yourself, it's so, when you're experiencing fear, that compassion, that empathy, those solution-focused techniques, just being able to hold yourself goes out the window. And it was so interesting when I was sharing, so that person's got exactly the same fear as you, but you were so quick to offer them reassurance and compassion and empathy. Mm-hmm. Why don't you find it interesting that we don't do that for ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And that was me not saying, yeah, I've reached enlightenment, I want to share that with everyone. It was more about being able to look at how we do things reflectively and kind of treat yourself the same way you're willing to treat a friend. Mm-hmm. And so I practice self-compassion a lot. So as I'm waking up, if I don't have a chance to meditate that morning, I'm thinking about how I'm feeling. Mm. How am I feeling? If I know I need to do something and I'm like, okay, how are you feeling? Are you exhausted? I need to practice compassion. You're too exhausted to do that thing. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can say no, and that's okay. You're not letting anybody down. You're not, you know, it's okay to practice that. I practice that quite a lot.
Saying no is a big one.
Yeah, saying no is a big one. Boundary setting is a big one. That's another big part of my self-care toolkit, boundary setting. Being able to say no and own it and be comfortable with that, and not feel like you're letting people down or having guilt and shame come and invade your space when you're just saying no. Silence, meditation, yoni steams. I love a yoni steam. There is a brand called Matulu Oblongata on Instagram, and run by an amazing person called Matula Amma. And she is a botanist and herbalist. And through her, I've learned how powerful plant spirit medicine is. So I want a full moon or a new moon, I just want to hold space for myself. I'll boil up my herbs, put them in a bowl, put a towel under the seat, and then put the actual seat on top to seal it. Put a bowl of herbs in and sit and steam my room. And hold space for myself and meditate and hold meditative breaths for myself during that practice. It's such a loving feeling. My vagina not only loves it, but I feel lighter afterwards. I feel connected to my physical self and to my womb, and I've been able to cleanse negative energy from that space, which is really nice. Masturbation is also in my toolkit.
I have a partner.
I have a life partner and a fiance. We enjoy each other, but it's important to enjoy yourself too. So that's another big part of my practice. just out here masturbating daily.
As you should be. Come on.
You want to be connected to your body.
No shame.
It's really important to feel connected to your body. And once you feel connected to your body, it's important to then, if you have someone in your life or people in your life that you're willing to share your body with, there's a form of liberation and reclamation that happens in that expression, because you already know what makes you feel good. Mm-hmm. So now you can share that practice with someone else. There's a few things. Those are kind of my key things at the moment. I'm journaling as and when. I was doing it twice a day, and now I'm like, I'm journaling when I want, and that's okay. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm letting myself down or I'm being inconsistent. I'm kind of journaling when I want. And also knowing that sometimes in your self-care toolkit, as well as that being about you and the tools that you can use for yourself, because I go to therapy, that's also for myself, knowing that other people can hold space for you, and knowing the people that you can trust to do that, especially if you're an empath, you're used to holding the space. It's important to have people that you can trust, who are strong, who can hold space for you. And the real is, not everybody who comes to you is going to be able to hold that space for you. So another part of my self-care toolkit is, if I know that right now I need grounding and I might need to be around other people, I go to a couple of people that I know can hold space for me. So whether that's me sitting and distracting my thought pattern by watching YouTube videos with them, or talking about music or talking about things that inspire us, or just being able to sit and have another energy in the space who's going to make me a tea, who's going to be like, it's okay if you cry, or it's okay if you don't want to talk, we can just sit here. That's important.
So important.
It is important. I talk about that in crisis toolkits, because when we talk about crisis plans, a lot of it is around kind of what's in your immediate community, contacting your GP, contacting IOP service, contacting Samaritans if you need it right there and then, or loved ones, but also knowing that you don't have to be in immediate crisis to access your loved ones for support. That could just be a part of your self-care.
That part.
Yeah.
You know, right? Could just be a part of your self-care. Like going and dancing at Pussy Palace could definitely be a part of self-care. Being able to physically release my chakras and dance and ain't no one judging me, I'm just being, that's a part of self-care, you know? So yeah, there's a few things and they change all the time. And I'm really excited about this new pattern and this new these new tools that I have in my toolkit. And I look forward to adding more to them, you know. I think
tell
it's really
us about
important.
That. What else do you want to add? Do you have anything that's like, okay, goals?
I am interested in exploring Tantra. I am really interested in being able to spend a month in a monastery. That experience was really profound for me, especially because my life is so busy. And to be have everything completely stripped back, I realised I've never had that before. Apart from when I'm in a crisis, and that's a different type of strip back, that's because you're just debilitated by your condition or experience. Being in a space where it was okay to cry, it was okay to be quiet, it was okay to go out, because, you know, even though it's a silent retreat, you always get a couple people that want to chat. And there was one experience where we went out to do working meditation. I didn't even know that working meditation meant we were going to go out into the grounds and work on the grounds. I love working in the garden. And I wasn't dressed appropriately, so I ran up, got my DMs, they're like, oh, you probably should put wellies on. And I was like the only black person there, so I'm not trying to be the late one, because I know you're probably already going to put that on me anyway. And I'm engaged. And I had my engagement ring on, but it was a bit bigger because I just had it resized post that situation. And I thought, oh, I don't want to make them late, so I'm going to put that in my bra. And since I was 11, I've always put things in my bra. Money, keys, crystals, everything. And that day I had two crystals, a black tourmaline and amethyst. They were chunky crystals. So anyone who wears a bra will know, if you put anything in your bra that's thick, you're going to create space and a gap. So I had this space and gap, and I've gone out through the working meditation, and someone was like, oh, you know, this is free labor. And I was like, looking at them like, these people have given us so much. They're not even asking us for money. If we can just clear some leaves, I'm okay with that. So, you know, you're like, okay, I'm going to move over here. So I'm out there working a sweat and, like, moving all these leaves to, like, four different piles and gathering the bark and moving them to different piles. And one of the monks were like, do you want to take a break? And I was like, no. I'm like, I'm happy where I'm at, just focusing on this activity and showing my gratitude for my work. And there was a point, which I now know was spirit, where I felt wind pass through my chest. And I felt that that was making me aware of how much I was working, because my body was obviously hot and I felt the wind, so I could feel the sweat. And I was like, oh, I'm really working. So anyway, we finished the practice. I've gone back in and we're about to, you know, go to eat. And I realized that my ring is missing. This beautiful engagement ring that my partner's given me is missing. Yeah. And I'm the girl that always finds stuff. So if you drop your nose stud, I will find it. Like, always been that cat. But we're out in the mud. I've worked at four different parts of these grounds. We've moved leaves, we've moved bark. It could be anywhere. If it's covered in mud, how am I going to find that? We don't have hoses. Like, so my mind is going straight into fear of the worst outcome. And so I'm on the verge of having a major panic attack, but I'm just like, let's go find this ring. So I'm out there trying to find this ring, and it makes it worse every time a monk would ask me, are you okay? Like, I would tell them what happened, and they would gasp, like, oh! Like, you've lost your ring. This is such a big thing. And so I'm out there trying to look for this ring. And the monk, Reverend Master Willard came out to help me, which was really beautiful. Diligently looking for this ring. And after about half an hour, my hands were frozen. And I was just like, I just need to go and breathe. So I walked away, got in my car, was about to drive off. And I noticed that he was still working. So I went to go and tell him, I'll be back in 10 minutes. And as I've gone to walk towards him, he just looked up. And it was... that's God, because as soon as I went to say, Reverend Willard, stop, he went, oh, it was there, right in front of him.
Wow.
Untouched, there was no mud, there was not even bits of bark, or it was just there, shining, gleaming, put that around my neck. And it was interesting, as we were walking back, I gave him a hug. Monks don't hug, But we just had this experience together, so he was willing to share that with me. So we hugged, and he's like, "I'm so like happy that you found it." And he said, "If you look, you find." And at the time, I was like, "Yeah, I hear you, but you were just like lucky enough to find it." But no, actually, if you look, you find. And for me, sometimes it's very easy to get distracted by what's happening and not create space for myself to actually think about, let me accept the situation for what it is. Mm. Now, practically, what do I need to seek? And that was a practice of that. Mm. And also compassion. I had no compassion for myself. I felt like I had failed everything. Mm. I thought he was going to leave me. It was just all going to, you know, it was just going to be terrible. So I think I'm really looking forward. That taught me so much, as well as other things. I'm looking forward to going back there and spending a month there, because I learned so much about some of my unhealthy practices, the lack of self-compassion, and the fear that I carry. And just exploring a bit more of me, you know, outside of being in a relationship, outside of being a daughter, outside of just me going off on adventures by myself. I used to do a lot of that, and I stopped doing that. I'm going to do more of that. Yes, there's a few things.
Good.
And being able to share that in my work. Yeah.
And Georgia, what about you? What are you looking to add?
I would say, like, just being able to love and appreciate myself quite boldly and honestly, and not feel like I need to seek love in other places from people or from having constant therapy. Being able to cope and manage on my own using the skills that I've learned, using my strategies, being able to just feel loved and know that, you know what, I can love myself no matter what, which sounds easier said than done, but it is actually really difficult, and absolutely, it's such a process. So that, yeah.
I really connect with that, because I think one of the biggest things for me that I want to add and kind of really establish in how I move through this world is accepting and receiving the space that people are holding for me, that you touched on. Because I think I've just been so isolated and like marching through this world, like it's just me.
Yeah.
I'll depend on me, and it's like, but no, there are people around me who are like, are prepared to hold space for me, pick up the work where I'm incapable at that moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just accept the love.
Yeah,
but
and
it's something I have to teach myself how to do.
I think I want to be able to as well explore like balance between being really independent and then being like, you know what, I can rely on people, because at the moment I feel like they're very polar, like one extreme to the next. I've realized. So I feel like I need to reach that stage of balance where, like, okay, I can rely on people, or I can be in a relationship, but I'm not just relying on that love. Like, I can give myself love. Like, I don't have to depend on anyone, like, financially, emotionally, but I can be supported. So it's learning that balance, learning that, you know what, I can have both, and to be able to sit in that and hold that is something that I want to learn, and I'm going to learn. And I will smash it.
Yeah. We'll do this together.
Yes.
This is community. This is what we're all about.
Exactly.
Are there any tools that you use physically to...
I think I'm in a really bad practice of not utilizing the tools that I know work for me. Mm. When I was living in a different country, I started journaling because I was kind of in despair, and all of the things that I could rely on, like the people that were in proximity to me or the things that I know I could gravitate towards, I no longer had available. So I was seeking stuff, and journaling was one of them. I was like, a regular sleep schedule. I'm going to bed by 12. We're not doing this up at 3 o'clock in the morning on YouTube nonsense. This is not helping you. And that all really worked. And so now here I find myself back in London, and I'm like, I know these tools, but I'm just not using them. But I think it's also because I'm trying to find that equilibrium of allowing new things and new ideas, putting myself in new places, to see the benefit that they could possibly have for me. And then also trying to like balance that out with the tools that I've been using. I guess constantly updating my toolbox, as it were. But tools that work for me at the moment, listening to music, we touched on that earlier. That can just really zone me out, and I'm like, okay, I'm calm now. Or podcasts. That's my new Audible. I think it's with the streaming and like the influx of how much music there is. Sometimes I'm like,
too much.
Unless I'm just going to play that same Erykah Badu album again, I'm not going to go on Tidal. But podcasts, that's me and a 2-hour conversation, and headphones, no one needs to bother me.
Yes.
And that really centers me. Because I think it is like the transference of knowledge and ideas that really bring me back to myself. And if I can have listened to something for 2 hours and learn something about someone else and thus a reflection of me, I'm like, okay, I'm good. Let's go, let's get this.
So can I just add in one more?
Yeah, go for it.
So I think we're going to go to a song soon, but just writing a letter to yourself like once a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I started doing. And then like on New Year's Eve, like I'll open it and then I'll be like, oh wow, like I've come so far. Or like,
love that.
Or and then
like
I'll write a letter of like all the things that like I've learned or like everything I can think of in that moment or what I've done or how I've felt. And then I open it and then I'm just like, wow, like look at all of this stuff that I've achieved or look at the, how I'm different. So yeah, writing a letter and then just setting a date where you open it or giving it to like a trusted friend or a family member if you're too tempted to open it. But yeah, I feel like writing a letter to yourself or writing a letter to yourself about how much you love yourself and from that place or writing a letter to your inner child, I find letters really affirming and powerful.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. I think that kind of links to journaling.
Yeah.
And something my cousin mentioned to me that she does as a practice is to journal in multiple different books and dedicate one for positive thought, one for whatever bullshit is that you're dealing with that day. Because sometimes it can end up being like a tunnel of, I've only written really like dark shit, where is the light here? And often there is like light in a day, you just, it kind of gets overwhelmed by everything else. But we are going to go to a song now, and then we can invite our third guest onto the show.
Yes.
It's Chloe Fulani.
So ready.
So we are going to hear from the sounds of Tweet and Missy Elliott.
Yes.
Oh,
Tuesday Takeover with Pussy Palace on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, 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 you are locked in to Pussy Palace Takeover of FUBAR Radio. Remember, we want to answer your questions. Let us know if you're in a self-love or self-care rut. What songs you may listen to in form of self-care. You can get at us, tweet at us, or DM us at FUBAR Radio on all of the socials.
Yeah, so continuing on with our discussion, we're just going through some of our physical tools that we use as forms of self-care. Let's move that into the emotional tools. I'm sure we've kind of touched on, because there's like a symbiosis between the two often, but one of the things that was mentioned before, like talking to your inner child, dismantling your insecurities, allowing yourself to be vulnerable, those are all examples of emotional tools to express love. If we all just want to like talk about the emotional tools that we use and I guess how they are useful to us. Georgia, do you want to start?
Yeah, so I feel like talking to my inner child daily is something that I have to do. So it's kind of going through each day and checking in with myself multiple times, like, how am I feeling? What emotion am I feeling right now? What mind am I in? And I am like an emotion mind, which is like hot and fiery. Am I in wise mind, which is quite like, I can understand? Or am I really like in logic mind, where everything is quite like not as emotional, if that makes sense? So I have to really check that. What I go through so many different emotions a day, so it's kind of tracking that. And I feel like a lot of people aren't really aware how they feel, whereas I feel like I'm very much a feelings person and I have to know how I feel, otherwise I just end up kind of in a rut or kind of like a zombie or kind of not noticing things that are happening each day. So yeah, talking to my inner child, and kind of when I feel really depressed or low, kind of like talking to myself like, okay, Georgie, you've got this, like get up, make some lunch, like here's how you do it, kind of like tutoring myself almost, like counseling myself to psych myself up, because often I would seek it in others, or like I don't live at home anymore, so I'll just like talk to my mum, but now I have to really do it and kind of be independent and be an adult, and it's really difficult. It's really like, it's so overwhelming sometimes, like you've got washing, you have to cook, you have to get ready, you have to like be social, you have to work, it's just like a lot sometimes. It's about like breaking it down and just allowing myself to cry as well, like crying so important. And I feel like going through my childhood, like, or at school, I used to cry all the time. Teachers would be like, oh, don't cry, or like stop crying. But like, I think tears are great for me. Tears like, I just come through the light. I feel so much better after a good cry. I feel really like refreshed, really rejuvenated. So yeah, allowing that emotion to surface, if I feel really depressed, letting that come out and sitting in it, being vulnerable, and not forcing myself to, oh, I need to wipe these tears away, or don't cry, because that's when it all builds up, and that's when I know for myself, that's when I hit crisis point. And so it's all about like preventing that kind of crisis point to happen.
All right, thank you.
I can relate to that. I really, really love crying. And I really love crying in a public space.
On the tube, on the bus.
There's something about the movement of the bus or the tube. There's something about being anonymous, like not being by myself, since I'm also an only child. And I feel like sometimes if I'm in a really, really dark place and I'm crying by myself, I can spiral out really easy. But this, it's almost, it feels almost protective when I'm out and about, or even crying in the club, honestly, like when there's something that triggers an emotion and I'm able to just let it out. Yeah, there's some sort of I think catharsis, is that the word?
Yeah.
But there, that feeling of even being held, even though no one is holding me, just because I'm out in public.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy that. I relate to that.
That's really interesting.
And also, just quickly, because you said like sometimes it kind of spirals out. So for me, I have to kind of set my self-soothing kind of station up like before I cry, because I know like this could potentially go into, I could hit a crisis point,
like,
or these feelings could become so overwhelming that I feel to the point of feeling really suicidal or things like that. So I have to have my lavender oil, I have to have my crisis plan ready. And also I set a timer on my phone because I love to cry.
That's really awesome.
I'm like, okay, cool, like how long? My max is half an hour. So usually it's like, yeah, like half an hour of me listening to sad songs, me crying, me feeling this shit, me feeling so alone, so like unsupported, feeling it, like really feeling it to the point where I'm like really hot and I've got hot tears, and then the timer goes off and I'm like, cool, I need to start calming myself down. Splash my face with cold water because it's, again, sensory. I kind of snap out of it. Also having like a cough sweet, because I don't like cough sweets, but if I have one of those, my thoughts will go on the taste, like this is disgusting, rather than I feel really suicidal. So it's like distracting myself, watching a YouTube video. So yeah, setting that timer and allowing myself to have that space and time, and not rushing through each day where like I haven't cried. Like I cry a good like 4 times a week, and I mean everyone's different, but for me that's my way of processing stuff and showing up today. Like crying's great.
I love that. Thank you.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
I'm really practical in some aspects. Like, have timed crying. That's like super
practical. It's like giving yourself boundaries.
To express.
It's like, go there, like, but come back.
I can be I can be vulnerable, but I'm going to safeguard myself from this spiraling. So I'm actually going to give an allotted time for that. It's really cool. So there's a few. So I think I mentioned kind of self-compassion. That's a really big, poignant one for me. And that practice is little things like, so if I'm in the bath, I tap. So I tend to tap my heart and think about how I'm feeling. That's really important for me because as a empath and as somebody that was socialized to be told that you're too sensitive and you can't express yourself, you can't express that, even though I think it's really important for people to express their emotion and be vulnerable. I learned that I started to fall out of practice of that compassion for myself. So being able to tap, tapping also releases a lot of energy anyway. It's really good for anxiety, especially if you, so there are tapping methods that you can even access on YouTube. So if you're experiencing anxiety or realizing it with thought process, so with my condition, my thought process can spiral and I can think about suicide and that can easily lead to a crisis. So tapping to calm myself down helps to distract my thought pattern, focuses on the action, and then I can start thinking about compassion, self-compassion for myself. Said that twice, self-compassion for myself. You get it. And then I guess other emotional tools that are really, really important for me is boundary setting. That is like, it's emotional. It also requires an action. It usually involves other people. But it starts with, it's an emotional tool of me being able to, A, practice compassion, because being able to say no is self-compassion. And I realized how difficult that was for me because I'm so used to saying yes. I'm so used to knowing what my darkness can look like, and people are used to seeing me put together in a certain way. So, oh God, Josh, she's amazing and queen, and you know, I appreciate that, but I also know I have been through some dark times. I have called Samaritans many a times. I have made plans. I have done certain things. So I know what that dark time really looks like. I have been sectioned and been in an institution for 3 months of my life and lived with people that are really unwell. So there is a part of me that when I hear or acknowledge people's darkness or see them in pain, I know what that feels like. So I don't want it to feel that way. I also know what it's like to hide that from people and feel like you have to do it by yourself. So I want to show that someone can show up for you. But that compassion and that empathy needs to have a boundary. Because if you don't, you don't know how to protect yourself. And next thing you know, you're unwell. And so boundary setting is a very powerful emotional tool. And when you are in the stage of making that transition from being the person that always says yes to now saying no, other people need to fall in line. And that's difficult because they're so used to you saying yes. So when you start saying no, it's like, but why? Oh, you can't come and, okay. So what do we do? Like, literally people start losing themselves. They don't know how to navigate that. And then you go into the, it's very easy to go into the cycle of guilt for feeling bad, for some not being able to show up for someone.
Over-apologising.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? I've cut all of that out. Like, because I know that if you, they know that if you really need me, I will do it, and I'll ground myself and I'll come there. But if I don't have the energy for myself, I can't be there, and that's okay. That is actually okay. And they're kind of interlinked. It's boundary setting, but it's still linked to compassion. So that's a very big thing for me. Those are kind of my key emotional tools at the moment.
I love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we have a third guest, and we're going to introduce them right now. This is Chloe Fulani. If you could please tell the people a little bit about yourself, the work that you do, and then we'll get into your emotional tools.
So I'm black feminist, poet, artist, performance art precisely, like a mixture of dance and reading and stuff. That's me.
Multifaceted goddess.
Yes. Also, we'll be found selling tickets on the door at Pussy Palace. This is the place that you see.
Your favourite door. Wait, are we allowed to say it?
You can say all the
you
things,
can say whatever
honey.
You want.
Okay. Yes, your favourite door, bitch.
Yes,
you
are.
Yes, your favourite door, yes. So, emotional tools. What does your emotional toolbox look like, Chloe?
I really just come off what Jocelyn said, in a way that's like actually kind of like, it's been interesting just thinking about like self-care and self-love and like how people use it or come into it. And one of my friends recently used a boundary setting, but in a like kind of violent way. And like, not that like what you're, it's not that it is a violent thing, but it's like, I find it so interesting when people come to this self-love and don't really know where they're coming or where that language is coming from as well. And like, what was one of the things they said to me? There was something like, they just said one of those terms that you would normally use when you're discussing like a sexual abuser, and I was like, oh, like I'm happy because I brought them into like black feminist self-care kind of conversation, and so I was like, great that you're coming into this, but like this like ruined our friendship. But yeah, I just wanted to like drop on that. But like, just how like, it's interesting how people use self-care or come into it, and like need to like really understand what that is before they're just using that word and throwing it around. Because like, obviously, for me, Jocelyn is someone who fully knows what that language is and where it's coming from. So there's never, but like a lot of people I've seen that are new into the space or new into the language are just like, what? Just like kind of under. Learn it or like learn the language but also understand where it's coming from. But anyway, that was just like,
we want to hear about your self-care journey as well. You know, but feel free to
say, I mean, talking about friends, I would say definitely me, it's having conversations with friends like emotionally. I can like do all the emotional work by myself in my head, but it doesn't translate into reality to have a conversation with someone else. And I find that so strange with me. Like, I need to be like, even with you, when one time we had a phone call, it was like, oh my God, I feel so good afterwards. Because it was like, I already had all that information, I already dissected it, but it wasn't reality yet. And I find, for me, my self-care, and I think it's also because I'm an extrovert, my self-care is also in conversation with others. Emotional self-care. Because then I can like, I feel better, more happy, or alive, and even physically being around people. Like, again, just seeing you today, when you came to me, I've kind of been thinking about these things around like black euphoria, specifically towards like when I'm around other black women, black people, and how like they can give me this energy of euphoria, just in these weird like short spouts of moments where like you didn't even know you needed it. And yeah, so that's what like, I guess like not really super tools, but kind of tools, I'll say. Like, yeah, I guess the phone calls to friends.
I don't know. I think the fact that you recognize when you need it and you're utilizing it in specific moments in your life, it really, you're using it like a tool. What could just be a conversation, you're making sure it fulfills you in that particular way.
Yeah, I'd actually say definitely, now you said that, made me think, yeah, when I was, there was this guy I was talking to, and he basically was gaslighting me throughout the whole conversation. It was just through text.
They do that a lot.
And I had to, like...
Sorry. But, you know, whilst we're here, we're going to tell the truth.
And, like, I had to call my friend. Like, I was like, I know there's something wrong. I know this is not right, but I'm now starting to feel crazy. And then calling my friend was just, like... it was able to just take me out of that situation. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't fully healed straight after, mm-hmm. but it was like, no, you are still sane, you're together, like, this person was trying to manipulate you. Mm-hmm. And that was like, yeah, so definitely, like, reaching out to others is like a massive emotional mm-hmm. self-care tool for me.
Yeah.
I love that you said that, because I think we're similar in that I do a lot of work in my head, like, leave me alone and I'll give you every theory of what's wrong, where it came from. At 6 years old, this happened and this is why I'm doing this right now. And I can do all that. And then I'll go out and I'll just keep doing the same, like, toxic bullshit to myself. Yeah. But once I say it to someone else, it's almost like I feel accountable. Because now you really see me. You know what the deal is. And you can side-eye me when I'm doing stupidness. Therefore, I'm not allowed to continue doing stupidness. Georgia, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I feel like friendships are important. Mm-hmm. And, like community, finding that. But then also on the other side, at the flip side, knowing when people aren't, I guess, showing up how you feel like you need that person to show up to, and kind of taking breaks in friendships as well, mm-hmm. or saying to people, you know what, I actually can't have you in my life. And it can be really hard, but I feel like when you start on the journey to self-love and self-care, you kind of recognize how unhealthy some people are, and trying to put that in a nice way, but it is the truth. And like, I can be unhealthy, like, absolutely. I really can be unhealthy. So it's kind of, you realize that and you're like, I have to kind of think, what am I getting from this relationship, what am I getting from this interaction, like friendship, relationship, whatever, like family member, and kind of having that, trying to have that open, honest conversation with them, like, you know what, I don't like it when you do this, or you know what, I can only see this person for a short amount of time, or kind of reevaluating who's in your life and like what they are giving. And if they aren't giving you anything, then I'm sorry, but you're gonna have to make the cut. You're gonna have to say, you know what, for my mental health, I can't really be around you at the moment. And feeling absolutely okay about it. Don't feel like ashamed. I think that's really important, kind of knowing what people are giving you at different times and selecting that and being okay at being selective.
Absolutely. Yeah. Community is going to heal the world. And it's true. It's community that's going to heal the world.
Let's talk about it.
Within community, we might need to diversify who we're going to for support. And sometimes it doesn't need to always be friends. Therapists are amazing.
Samaritans too. Because
they're not your friends.
Yep.
Right. There's no unconscious bias. There's no unconscious bias, because they're paid to listen just to what's going on and to give you some constructive coping tools, and coping tools for you to go out back into the world. Sometimes your friends might not be able to do that for you because they're emotionally linked to you and they want the best for you.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen that you keep making the same mistake with the same guys or the same girls or the same people, and it's like, yeah, well, baby, you knew that was going to happen. Well, actually, sometimes you need to have someone that can help you dissect that, and that might be the therapist.
Yeah. I love therapy.
Quickly as well.
Same.
Yeah.
When it comes to crying, again, because I'm an extrovert, I cry best with my friends. Like, there was like 2 months ago, I was just like not sleeping well. I was like, I know something's off, but don't really want to pinpoint it. Then I went to go see 2 friends, and then one of my friends is talking about like how she's not being able to write and stuff, and I'm just bawling, and I'm like, I'm sorry, you're talking, and I'm crying, and they're just holding me, and I'm like, and then I was like, thinking about when you were talking about crying, I was like, oh yeah, most of my vital emotional cries have been like with friends or in a coffee shop with a friend. And I'm like, yeah, I need to sometimes cry alone, but yeah.
And so I think there's something about that of almost like being able to validate the pain with others, because once you've, when you cry on your own, it's different. When you cry with somebody else, they're able to see your true pain. They're able to, and also the compassion will come out of them, and the empathy that you actually aren't finding it difficult to turn into yourself. When you're able to receive that from somebody else, it validates your pain, but it also makes you accountable about what needs to happen post this. And sometimes it's harder to do that on your own, because you're so used to it. You cry in that darkness, put on your lippy, and out you go. Like, and no one knows.
Okay, on the back of that, is there
let's go deeper.
Let's go a little deeper. Can you tell, like, are there any distinctions between, like, before you self-love, self-care, and after? Like, is it in the moment? Is it, like, a ripple effect? You feel it later? Like, can you tell the difference?
Absolutely. For me?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, when I am not practicing self-care in a time that I need to, so it doesn't, I don't have to be in crisis, but you can almost like have this, I call it like my out of body silent watcher. So I will watch myself deteriorate, knowing you haven't done your spiritual bath today, you're going to bed at 3 a.m. and you know you need to wake up at 7, you're going to be exhausted. Like, sleep deprivation is also a thing. why are you still on YouTube? Like, these things, and you can see it. It's almost like I'm watching myself deteriorate. And then as soon as I create that space for myself, because it almost sometimes self-care practices feel like work. And sometimes they're tiring to do. Like, I mean, there was times when I was like getting back from work at like 10 and I'm like, oh, a spiritual bath takes a while to prepare. And then also when I've got all those lavender bits and the rose petals in the end, I need to gather those up. I've got to clean up. Like, I can't just get out. Like, it's a process. It's a process. Sometimes I'm not there and I don't want to do that. But not when I don't create that time, I feel it and I can see it, and then the shame builds in because I start shaming myself for it. You know better. And then when I actually create that space for doing it, like perfect example of my baths I'll use again, when I get in a bath, when I get in my spiritual bath and I get out, I feel lighter. I feel held. I'm speaking karma. Like, it just happens instantly because I've given myself that space. And yes, some might say there's a placebo effect that's happening. Maybe. But the fact that I think it's part of the fact that I have mentally created that space, physically created that space, and being able to do an action for myself, it feels good, you know? Yeah. And I think when I am sleeping on time, I now put like a time on my phone, so my alarm will go off. After 9:30, there's no more phone calls. And then there'll be another time that goes off, 11 o'clock, you need to be in bed. I know you can stay up all night because you're nocturnal, you're born at 3:15 in the morning, so that's going to be your peaking hour and your witching hour. But babes, you've got things to do.
Yeah.
Go to sleep. And when I have that routine, I feel better. I want to have sex. I want to do things. When I'm exhausted and tired, I don't want to do shit. And it's just knowing that. So I think it's really important for me to, and that's when you're honest with yourself. It's really important for me to be honest with myself about what works and what doesn't, and don't try and fool yourself into, it's okay, I can do this for a few days and I'll be okay. You know you're not gonna. And that's okay.
That's some real talk right there.
Routines are very important. Very, very, very important. You'll slip up sometimes because life happens, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that everything in life needs to be super structured, because there needs to be some flexibility because life still happens. But if you can feel yourself slipping when you know that you've been out of routine for a while, that is the moment, that is a call to action.
Yeah.
Don't wait for crisis to happen.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, I'm going back. And that's what I used to do. Slip out of it, do self-care, then slip out of it, have fun, enjoy life, and then get unwell, then I'm back again, and it was just a cycle. And it's shameful. So just be honest with yourself. When you know that you're slipping out of a routine, get back on it. There will there will be flexibility, but it's so important. You know yourself better. You know.
I am loving this conversation. We're gonna take a little musical break, but before we go, we wanna do a little exercise when we come back. What ways do you show love to yourself? Think about ways that you show love to yourself and write down three things that you absolutely love about yourself. And later on in the show, we're going to jump into that. But right now, we're jumping into Carrie Fox, No Small Talk, and you're listening to the PP Takeover.
Yeah.
Three cell phones and I still don't ever call them. Why would I call them? Bitch, you know I'm ballin'. Spend that money, make it bounce back like Spalding. Got a new nigga and he say he from New Orleans. If he ain't talking money, nigga, why the fuck you talkin'? All my bitches bossy, all my diamonds flossy. Rap gets sriracha, man, you know I'm saucy. I got a white dude in Boston, he whip a Audi. Bitch, I'm taking calls, no small talk. 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 Three cell phones and I still don't ever text them. Catch me out in public and you know I'm flexing. He saying that he got connections, I'm a finesse. I got a nigga out in Texas, he's
driver, compressor. Top notch niggas get the most, not the lesser. Why would I even stress them when they be pressing? I just leave them guessing and move on to the next one. Bitch, I'm taking calls, no small talk. 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 Okay, this is the part when I need y'all to make it bounce like Spalding. Yeah. Make it bounce like Spalding. Make it bounce like Spalding.
And welcome back to Pussy Palace Takeover on FUBAR Radio. So just before the break, we asked our illustrious guests to think of things that they love about themselves. And I'm asking you to do that at home as well. So feel free to send those in either by email or on Twitter or Instagram. So if we just all go around and share one of the things that we love about ourselves, do you have a tribute? Volunteers tribute?
What?
Do you want to go first?
Did you say tribute?
Yeah.
Game
Hunger
of Thrones.
Games.
Oh. Game of Thrones? Hunger Games? No. So some white media. No.
Lol.
Anyway, let me just say. My smile.
Because it's beautiful.
It is.
Even though, like, it's such a, like, physical and thing that's people reflecting externally and stuff, throughout the years of my life, it has been the only consistent thing that hasn't changed about, like, I guess how people receive it. And there's always this thing of, like, people always say, like, oh, you brighten me up when I see your smile, blah, blah, blah. And I'm always like, even when I'm not feeling great about that, or I'm not in my own great mood, I do enjoy that, like, my smile can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's just been throughout my childhood to now.
Yeah.
It's like,
beautiful.
Yeah. That's
magical.
I
love that. I love that, yes.
Right?
We love that about you too.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I love everyone else's smiles as well.
Thank you.
My best.
Just so it's clear. Dan, what do you want to share with us?
Mine is my soft, gentle, sensitive nature.
Yes.
We're in a really, really hard world, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and we're pushed to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a time and place for everything, but mm-hmm. I love leading with softness.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the more that we try it out, the more it'll have a ripple effect on each other, you know?
Yeah.
That's mine. What about yours,
Aiden? What's mine? I'm not sure of mine. It's that task of trying to think about nice things of yourself. And I'm like, well, we've never done this before. But having said that, there are many things that I do love about myself. I think maybe compassion.
Mm.
I think I've always prided myself on kind of being like hard and tough as nails.
Mm-hmm.
My West Indian's upbringing gave that to me. But the more I am reminded that I have like a breadth of compassion.
Mm.
I think I love that about myself.
Yeah. Mm.
That's beautiful.
What else has everyone got to share?
Mine is my mental health journey and like my mental health condition, which is borderline personality disorder. Like, I feel like I've come to terms with that diagnosis, and I feel like if I hadn't been through all of my stuff, I wouldn't be like as understanding, as compassionate, as in tune with myself if I hadn't gone through all of the shit, basically.
Yeah.
So I feel like I love my mental health, because even though some days it can be really ugly and really like hard and really harsh, it, at the end of the day, I look at it as like it's a child, and it, I teach it, and I need to look after it. And so that's something that I love, because yeah, I wouldn't be the person I am today without it. I wouldn't be the self-care queen. I wouldn't do all of that stuff if I hadn't been through that shit, and if my brain was wired differently. So yeah, my mental health, I love it.
It's just so wonderful, this conversation. I guess for mine, even though it's, so it's one thing, but it leads nicely into a second thing. So it's my spirit, which leads nicely into my expression, because they're interlinked. My spirit, for me, I've never actually wrote that down. Today is the first time I've kind of acknowledged that, that I actually do love my spirit. My spirit is tenacious. Yes, it's strong. It's motherly. I have the strength and the capacity in me to carry others, but at the same time, I am soft and I'm sensitive and I feel things. My spirit is ever changing and floating, and it's teaching me new things about how to express myself. It teaches me new things about how to show compassion to myself and to others. It teaches me new things about how to be bold in my expression of love. So yeah, those are things that I find really important, and I've never really acknowledged that. And spirit's kind of been a thing for me recently, of just acknowledging what my spirit is when it's talking to me, when it's telling me things, when there's a call to action. And also when I need to be held, and it tells me that too. It tells me when to be strong. It tells me when to hold others. It's this amazing thing that's ever changing and growing with me in this journey, and feeds into how I express my love in the world and navigate the world. So, yeah, so my spirit.
Yes. Thank you for those shares. Thank you, everyone in the room, for that.
For real.
So we're just going to make our way into a fun little game.
Yeah.
We're going to read out a quote, and we have to attribute who it is to, which public figure. Celebrities can be deep, too.
Do your best.
Okay, so my mother was very persistent, and she kept saying that I had to take care of my mental health. Who do we think said that?
I feel like that was Megan Thee Stallion.
Megan Thee Stallion. So other options are Drake, Nicki Minaj, or Beyonce.
No.
It's Megan.
Sorry.
Are we only allowed one answer with the group? Is it the group's decision?
Who wins?
Beyonce, but
okay. Chloe.
I'm gonna agree with Justin's spirit. I'm going with Megan.
Okay. If we lose,
why Beyonce?
I just feel like Beyonce is very like grounded, and from what I've read about her and like her interviews, like she does reference her mum sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just feel so connected with Beyonce, like we're sisters, so I just know.
And why do you say Megan?
Megan also has a similar relationship with her mum, and I've been watching some interviews with Megan. And she has a really good awareness of how to take care of herself. She's really good at boundary setting. She's just come into the game really knowing how to navigate it and take care of herself first. So I felt like that would come from her. Beyonce too, but I also didn't know. I've watched a lot of Beyonce's interviews, and whenever she talks about her relationship with her mum, it's always a caring, nurturing aspect. But she never talks about, Beyonce actually never talks about her mental health. So I didn't see Beyonce talking about that, but here we are.
And the answer is
Beyonce.
It is Beyonce.
It's my sister, Beyonce. I get very passionate in games.
You're in the beehive.
Yeah, I'm in the beehive.
Okay, you're in the hive.
I'm gonna have the twins. Yeah. Maybe not married to Jay-Z.
I like her. I do love her, but I'm not in the hive.
Yeah.
I'm not dying for Beyonce. Mm-mm.
No, I wouldn't love her.
This conversation. Anyway. All right, next question. All right, next quote. Depression never discriminates.
Lady Gaga.
We have Lady Gaga. We have Jim Carrey. We have Dwayne The Rock Johnson or Adele. So we're in Lady Gaga.
Okay, got one for Lady.
Okay, so let's have a discussion.
Wow.
Boundaries.
Wow.
No, I feel like it could be two people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it could be Lady Gaga or Jim Carrey.
Mm,
Jim Carrey
has been quite
vocal about his depression.
Yeah.
I love his journey. You know, I've seen him talk to Eckhart Tolle and Oprah. Like, so I feel like it could be either. And
I like the way that you go through this.
Right?
Yeah.
So I feel like Ching Chang Walla.
Let's see. can I just say how I think it's Lady Gaga?
Yeah.
Because she's just like, it's a very short statement. It's quite bold. And I feel like she would just make it, like that statement, just like, depression never discriminates and that's it, end of interview, whatever. So that's why I think, like, it's not a long quote.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Chloe, do you have any thoughts before we see the answer?
Look, not that I'm team Jocelyn, but I'm going to go with Jim Carrey.
I have not paid her. Okay.
I know. I think it's like
bribery.
Hashtag best friend. Yeah, Jim Carrey.
Oh, awkward. So what? So that's two again. Sorry.
It's okay.
Again, we know.
I'm only child. I kind of know. Being left out.
Drum roll. And the quote was said by.
Oh, okay.
No.
Skipping over the rock.
I don't really know much about the rock.
Come through, Self-Care King.
But when you perpetuate
the rock,
the rock is the answer.
You haven't even said it. Sorry. Is it the rock?
Might
be the rock.
Okay, well, look at you, Dwayne. Come through.
That's different.
I didn't even know.
Never expected that.
Actually, I've watched a couple of interviews where he kind of has like a really grounded take on his career and like fame and the limelight.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that could be on brand.
Yeah.
Good for you. I'm still not watching the films.
You're not going to see Jumanji the next level?
I'm good.
Ooh, this next one's interesting.
What was that for?
So,
I just saw it on the way here today.
So that could be all of
this. This is not fair.
Let us fill in the listeners on what we're looking at. So, this next one is from.
What is it?
From our community, so
is,
mental health is not fashion. So who said
this?
I love it.
So who said this quote? Is it Tanya Compass, Aisha Tan Jones, Travis Alabanza, or Sistrin?
I think you should say it.
It's Aisha.
It's Aisha Tan Jones.
Oh, Aisha.
Yes, it is. You all know this.
The unanimous group decision.
Come together.
Are you going to tell people like where that statement came from? Yeah. Like, where she made that amazing, profound
so
statement?
Was it Paris
Gucci.
Fashion Week?
Yep.
Or
yes.
One
on the
of
Gucci
the
runway.
European.
It was on the Gucci runway. It was Paris.
And it was a Gucci runway, and they had their latest collection, which was very...
straight jackets.
Yeah, they're wearing straight jackets. And had straight jackets on what they called
conveyor belt.
And just bringing out the models, and it was just very distasteful. And Aisha just came out and wrote on her hands, mental health is not fashion.
Yeah.
And it just stormed all the press and really made the fashion world kind of look at what Gucci had done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not everyone agreed, but it was powerful. It's very powerful. Big up Aisha.
And so we're just going to take some more comments and questions from these people that have been listening in for the last 2 hours. So another tip that someone uses is putting a face mask on and a lighting candle. I have only just recently got into face masks. I think simply because I've just seen people use them, I'm like, can't be all that. It can't be all that. My skin.
It's glowing.
I've got you. There is an amazing brand. There's two. Wild Seed. Do you know about Wild Seed?
Mm-mm.
Online, run by this amazing sister who's from Ghana. Big up Ghana, because I'm from Ghana. And Wild Seed have this just a great line of face masks, and one of them is Green Smoothie. It's like a clay mask. It will clear up any spot. It's amazing. And then Mtulu Oblongata also puts tubs of sea moss that she blends herself for everyone. Sea moss will change your life.
Noted. I'm taking notes over here.
Blemishes gone. Open pores shrinking. Like,
yes.
Forever glowing, even when you've been on a night out. It's wow. Like, it, yeah. It's amazing.
Mm.
And you can put it on your genitals too.
Yeah. And Iris messaged in to say that Bossy by Khalees is the song that it may not cheer them up, but it makes them feel ready to face the outside world.
Mm.
And I think so much of Khalees' music does that.
Yeah.
I have bought tickets to see her on tour next year. 20 years of Kaleidoscope.
Prepared.
I am.
I just saw that today.
Wow. Amazing. Okay. Taking notes.
But we are approaching the end of our show.
I can't believe it already. 2 hours.
Time flew by, and yes. I'm really grateful for that we managed to have this discussion about self-care. Yes.
Mm.
I know that I've taken away a lot of tools and tips that I will be implementing into my life, and I hope everyone at home listening can also say the same.
Mm.
So we just want to thank our guests for being here, for sharing the space and sharing of themselves. So if you all just want to tell the people where they can find you, Georgia, where can we find you? What are the ats?
So it's at Selfcare Queen. And then I do have a website as well. So it's worldofselfcare.com for all of your self-care, body positivity, kind of inspiration. I share a lot about my mental health online as well. So when I'm having dark moments, I'll do a picture and write loads underneath. because that's my way of just kind of showing up and being honest with people that social media isn't all glossy and shiny. Mm-hmm. So yeah, follow me at Self Care Queen.
Okay, and Jocelyn?
You can find me at Yasankofa, YAASAN for November, KOFA on Instagram. And if you want to learn more about our Naked Truths, if you want to model, if you want to collaborate, or you just want to attend and come and hold space for yourself, that is at Our Naked Truths with an S. I run the account, so you can also inbox me if you have any questions, just want to learn more. We've just come out of a social media hiatus. We're coming back next week. So I look forward to speaking to you all then.
Yes. And Chloe, where can people find you?
Simple, just Instagram. One dot Chloe F. No, one dot Chloe dot F.
Okay.
Yeah.
So find all of our guests on Instagram or other social medias and their websites.
Also catch me at Pussy Palace as well.
Yeah.
What is the next one?
The next one is in December. We do have a December party.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll
It'll
be announcing
be
soon.
Yes.
Or it's towards the end of the month. We'll be it's announcing soon.
Ooh.
So make sure you follow Pussy Palace on Instagram and Twitter. That is PXSSYPALACE. And wait to hear the announcement for our next party.
Yes.
But that has been us. That has been our show.
Yes. Aiden, it was great to do this,
you
have this
too.
Conversation.
I love you, Dan.
I love you too, babe.
I love everyone in this room.
So
much.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And we are going to play out the show with
one of my favorites.
Jasmine Sullivan.
Woo.
Masterpiece.
Because we are all masterpieces. Yes.
Exposed, but I can't hide no more. I can't hide. As the sun shines on all of my glory, my flaws don't look so bad at all. What was I so afraid of? Every part of me is a vision of a portrait of Mona. Mona Lisa. Every part of me. And I finally see I'm a work of art, a masterpiece. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Who is this I tried so long to find? Filling my head with lies that I'm not good enough. Then I heard something in my ear tell me I'm perfect. Now that I know the truth, time to show and prove. Every part of me is a vision of a portrait of Mona Lisa.
masterpiece.